Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. We used to think Alzheimer's was caused by cooking food in aluminum pots. Now scientists are looking at a host of factors that might lead to the development of this degenerative brain disease. And Dr. Robert McDonald at the University of Lethbridge believes disruptions to your body's natural clock may play a big role. And IFASA, Alberta's Institute for Food and Agricultural Sciences, is counting on an intensive research collaboration to boost Alberta's strength in the development of value-added food products. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. There's probably not much that's more heartbreaking than facing a loved one who simply doesn't remember you or the life that you shared together. Elderly patients with Alzheimer's disease are sometimes referred to as the walking dead, and for families, the final years become a painful, long goodbye. First described a century ago, the cause of this incurable disease remains elusive. But Dr. Robert McDonald hopes to change that scenario with his work on circadian rhythms. Robert holds a Canada Research Chair in Behavioral Neurosciences at the University of Lethbridge.
Yeah, Alzheimer's is a neurodegenerative disorder, and what that means is the brain actually starts to die. And it's strongly linked to age, so it's what we call an age-related cognitive disorder. That is, the brain dies, and it seems to damage areas of the brain critical for memory.
Do we have any idea at this point what's actually causing Alzheimer's? I know in the past people have said, well, don't use aluminum pots to cook your food.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. It really sort of pinpoints what my research is all about, and that is we do not believe that we know what the etiology of Alzheimer's disease is. And one of the problems is that major researchers in the field have sort of gone for what we call single factor theories of Alzheimer's disease. That is, they believe that one factor causes the disorder. We do not believe that's true. There's at least 10 to 12 different factors that have been linked to Alzheimer's disease. And what we're interested in is looking at the relationships between those different factors.
What might some of those factors be?
Everything from stress to diet to slight head traumas, genetics, neurotransmitter degeneration over time. And one that we're fascinated with and people have generally ignored is circadian rhythms. That is, you have a clock in your brain that's 24 hours long. And that clock tends to degenerate in aging and has been linked to Alzheimer's disease.
Now, is that why older people sometimes can't sleep through the night?
That's exactly what's happening. The clock is starting to degenerate. And what we've shown is that the circadian system falling apart is actually a better predictor of cognitive deficits than aging is. So aging research and its links to Alzheimer's disease is a billion-dollar industry, and what we're suggesting is that you can pull apart people who are the same age but have either the decline in the circadian system or not, and you're going to have either good or poor cognitive aging.
Now, how do you know, though, that it actually relates to Alzheimer's? What gives you that extra clue?
We're not quite sure that it is, but To us, it's as strong a link to Alzheimer's as any of the other factors, and we feel that it really deserves to be investigated. And there's been some really fascinating research lately going on, pulling apart those different components, suggesting that the circadian one may be the strongest factor. The circadian system has a huge effect on the nervous system and the body, so if it falls apart, you could see that it could have some very serious consequences.
What exactly are you going to do then to investigate that?
My graduate student Laura Craig and I have been working on this for several years now, and we are just what we're doing is we're taking sub-threshold factors. So we take the factors, introduce them into our animal model, and they don't produce memory impairments. They don't produce the brain damage. And then we put them in combination. What we're showing is these huge ramp-ups in cell death in areas critical for memory and huge memory impairments. So we're clearly showing that if you combine these subthreshold factors, you can produce Alzheimer's-like symptoms.
So what makes that huge leap, though?
Yeah, so what we believe is happening is that all these factors can sort of be divided up into active and passive factors, we call them. And what passive factors do is they endanger the neurons. So they make them more susceptible to other factors. They don't kill the cells. They don't cause the deficits or memory impairments, but they're more susceptible. They're weaker. And if that other factor comes in and it happens to be an active factor, it can actively kill the cells. And if the cells are weaker, they're gone.
So it's kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back.
Absolutely. It's all about thresholds.
Now, you're here working on this at the University of Lethbridge. You've come from Toronto. Why did you come here to do this work?
One, I love Alberta. Secondly, this group here is really world-renowned for sort of the approach they're taking to neuroscience. And this approach is an emphasis on function and behavior instead of more sort of at the more microscopic end of genes, proteins, ion channels. They're trying to link those changes to function, and they are just absolute experts in that area.
Why is function so important?
It's ultimately what we're interested in. A gene is not really that interesting to us unless we understand what its function is and its ultimate role in behavior. So one of the critical problems in research right now, for example, if you look at stroke or you look at Alzheimer's disease, our ability to actually describe what the deficit is not very powerful. We're not very good at it, and yet we've been studying these things for a very long time. So what this group is doing very sophisticated analysis of what the system can do in the normal animal or human, and then look at it when it falls apart in a disorder. That's absolutely critical if you're working on treatments, because you need to know, are you actually improving something?
So if we take that back to your research on Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. and the relationship to these circadian rhythms, mm-hmm. Say it does turn out that, yes, this is a big deal. How then can you turn that into something that we can treat?
Well, I think you've hit it again. I mean, the thing about Alzheimer's for us is we're really interested in prevention. It's very hard to repair the brain after it's damaged. If you can prevent the damage from happening, what we're actually going to claim is that Alzheimer's patients actually fall into subgroups, maybe five different subgroups, and they have different combinations of cofactors. What that tells us is you have to understand which factor that person has in order to treat them, and the treatments for each subgroup would be different.
So I'm just trying to think then, if I'm going to have a hard time sleeping at night because my rhythms are mm-hmm. changing, what would I end up doing?
Well, this is a key. One of the populations here in southern Alberta we're interested in are people who have to do shift work. So nurses, fire people who work for fire departments, policemen. They're constantly having their circadian rhythms shifted, and this is very hard on the system. And so what we're predicting is that those populations may actually be more susceptible to things like Alzheimer's disease. So we want to track those populations and see what effect this is having long term. And circadian has a much more broader impact than Alzheimer's disease. It has effects on heart disease, cancers. All of these things are now becoming linked to circadian dysfunction.
So that ultimately could change the way that we actually work or the way we function as a society.
Absolutely. I mean, the implications of circadian disruption on people's health, I think, is going to be a really big issue in the future.
Now, the Canadian Center for Behavioral Neurosciences has just established a center with an MRI machine. How are you going to be using that in your research on Alzheimer's?
Yeah, we're absolutely fascinated by looking at populations that are going to have these different factors in their lives: stress, circadian dysfunction, early cholinergic depletion. So this is a neurotransmitter that depletes during Alzheimer's disease. And we want to track the functionality of critical areas in the brain for memory and see if these things are impacting those systems. And if so, can we alleviate them by manipulating those factors?
It sounds like you really have your work cut out for you. Thank you very much, Robert.
My pleasure.
That was Dr. Robert McDonald, Associate Professor and Canada Research Chair in Behavioral Neurosciences at the University of Lethbridge. When it comes to food, global competition is intense.
industry and government recognize if Alberta farmers are to make their mark on the world stage, there must be more support for the research and development of value-added agricultural products. That's where IFASA comes in. IFASA is the Institute for Food and Agricultural Sciences Alberta, and it's a collaboration between the Alberta Research Council, the University of Alberta, and Alberta Food, Agriculture and Rural Development. Now, the federal government has joined the partnership. On hand for the recent announcement at Discovery Place on the University Farm was Chuck Strahl, Canada's Minister of Agriculture and Agri-Food.
Well, we have an intense desire to partner with quality partners across the country when it comes to science and innovation, really the applied science, in a way that will help commercialize a lot of the good ideas that are out there. This is a strategy that we've developed at a federal level. It dovetails almost ideally and perfectly with IFASA's goal of bringing industry and scientists together in a way that allows us to take advantage of everything from value added to food safety issues to cutting edge research, and doing it in a way that allows us to make Alberta and Canada a leading proponent of all that around the world. So it fits well. It's something that we can see mirrors our own goals, and it allows us to reach a bigger critical mass of expertise to develop all that.
You mentioned the scientific strategy. What is that, and how would it fit with what's happening here in Alberta?
We have a new ADM of science, Dr. Mark Fortin. He has been putting together not only a review of our current federal facilities and what they do well and do best, but also working on partnering with industry and with provincial partners on ways to maximize the dollars we spend on the research level. So we'll always have federal research centers. They do a specific job in this whole research mix. But a key part of that strategy that we announced this spring is to do these kind of partnerships like IFASA and others across the country where we do in Alberta 44% of all of the research in the province. But to do that in a standalone way is just silly. It's just we can do far more working together and attract a better grade of scientists and more industry participation by working together. So it's just the ability to, the core of it is the ability to work together with partners to maximize the benefit for taxpayers and the farm community. I think it's just a win-win-win situation.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
That was Chuck Strahl, the Federal Minister of Agriculture and Agri-Food. Putting in a word for the provincial government was Doug Horner, Alberta's Minister of Agriculture, Food and Rural Development.
Well, the IFASA group, if you will, is all about collaboration. It's all about bringing partners together to do research that will benefit, in the end, the final producer, but overall, the entire agricultural value chain in the province of Alberta. What we've talked about is our vision in Alberta's agricultural industry is to drive the value chain so that we get margin all the way through the chain and into the producer's hands, as well as through the chain so that we can compete globally. In order to compete globally, of course, we've got to research the new product development. We have to research new and better ways of doing things, new and better varieties to reach a consumer need. If we're just doing research for the sake of research, we may or may not hit that consumer need. And really, when you boil it down, it's all about being able to sell our products internationally for a premium if we can, and certainly to reach those markets and get that market access. So science plays a huge role in that. Having the federal government on side, obviously they do about 45% of research in Alberta. We're partnered with them in throughout the province. We have a number of scientists here that are Agriculture Canada scientists that are partnered with us in various projects. So it's a very natural fit. It gives us that extra boost that we were looking for in terms of putting the group together. And in research today, you're talking about critical mass, and you're talking about making sure that you're not duplicating efforts elsewhere. So having this type of a group together to look at those issues is extremely important for our ag industry.
What do you see as being Alberta's strengths?
Well, our strengths are that we're a very innovative group. I mean, the entire agricultural industry is willing to look at challenges and look at opportunities and turn those challenges into those opportunities. Alberta's strengths are we have a very good infrastructure of research right now. We've got a tremendous amount of investment into that infrastructure. We have a number of endowment funds that are available, whether that's the Alberta Ingenuity Fund or the Medical Research Fund. And we've put a lot of dollars into the Livestock Development Fund or the Crop Development Fund. All of those things tie into EFASA. So there's a funding consortium, there's a strong talent pool, there's a strong infrastructure base there, and more importantly, industry is connected to all of that, and that's really where our strength lies.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Take care.
That was Doug Horner, Alberta's Minister of Agriculture, Food, and Rural Development. Over the last 85 years, the Alberta Research Council has helped in the development of agricultural sciences and, more recently, the new field of biotechnology. Micah Awesomechuk is Vice President of Life Sciences at ARC.
ARC's role is one of a research provider and partner. Our scientists collaborate with the other scientists in AAFRD and the U of A, and as well, ICS as a key partner or provider of infrastructure and world-class facilities, like the $25 million investment here at Discovery Place. We've also got world-class facilities at the ARC in a demonstration and pilot scale for a number of activities. So we've got a really wonderful continuum.
What role do you see agriculture and the life sciences playing in Alberta's future in terms of science, innovation, and the economic wealth that will come from that?
I think it's a huge role. We've got a great economy based on our heritage industries, agriculture, forestry, energy. Right now, energy is the only one that's going great guns. Agriculture and forestry are suffering. And so if we want to maintain our level of success in this province through diversification, we need to make sure that we take care of those industries and provide them with opportunities for new markets and new innovations. And if you think about biomass from agriculture or forestry as the only renewable source of carbon that we have, that's a pretty big deal. It opens up all kinds of avenues for us in terms of new products, new energy, new materials, new chemicals from biomass.
What are some of the projects that you have on the go now?
Well, IMUS is one that we talked about. So IMUS is the Integrated Manure Utilization System, which essentially turns manure into green power and electricity. And that project is a collaboration with Highmark Renewables and the Highland Feedlot in Vegreville. And that's a demonstration scale project, so pre-commercial, that's attracted a whole lot of interest, and we've seen a lot of success. And now we're looking at expanding that program into the utilization of other waste streams like landfill wastes or other agricultural waste to produce high-value products like high-value fertilizers.
And how about through IFASA?
That is one of the programs through IFASA. The other programs include the from a health and wellness perspective, we've got people collaborating with Dr. Noreen on the development of low saturated fatty acid oils. So from a health perspective, you get that piece of it too. We talk a lot about the bioindustrial opportunities, but we've got a lot of opportunities in health and wellness as well.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Cheryl.
That was Micah Awesomechuk, Vice President of Life Sciences at the Alberta Research Council. The man in charge of IFASA, the Institute for Food and Agricultural Sciences Alberta, is Tom Facklum.
IFASA, or the Institute for Food and Agricultural Sciences Alberta, is an alliance between the major research providers, the University of Alberta, the Alberta Research Council, Alberta Agriculture, Food and Rural Development, and now Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada. And it's intended to bring all of the resources, infrastructure, people together and apply those to critical programs for the province. It's focused on R&D and product development and process development in areas of agriculture, agri-food, and agri-industrial areas.
We see so many of these collaborations forming now. What's the need for this sort of alliance or collaboration?
I guess it's several fold. One, you have an increasingly competitive environment. how do you compete worldwide? Even if you're a individual farmer or a small company, ultimately you're impacted by global events. We are competing all the time, everywhere. And having said that, the only way we're going to be able to start addressing the needs immediate and long-term is by taking the very, very best of our talent and applying those to, I'll call them strategic priorities, and making certain we not just do good science, but we deliver that science to our stakeholders. I mean, ultimately, it's how do we add value? Not just value amongst the members and the scientists, but how do we add value to industry? How do we add value to government policy? How do we add value at the end of the day? And I think that's the only way we can be competitive. I don't believe any single institution or any single laboratory can do it. So we're really trying to leverage the best in this province to help our industry.
When you're taking on the whole world, and that's certainly what agriculture does and the agri-industry, what on earth does Alberta have to offer in this huge stage? You've been around the world. You've spent a lot of time in biotechnology. So what do you see as what we have to offer?
It's a very good question. We talk a lot about the Alberta advantage, and I think there are true advantages, but in many respects, we have to create our own. In this case, how does a province compete globally? Well, quite frankly, we have to, I think, pick our battles, so there's an element of focus. Secondly, yeah, we do go out and bring the very, very best. In many respects, what we are doing in terms of IFASA is truly unique. And if we can add the serious economic outcomes long-term to the sector, it's a wonderful model for helping to build and support our various industry sectors. But like in any business, if you're going to be serious in competing, you have to make certain you have the resources and the focus and the determination to drive towards those goals. I think that's the basis for our programs and the direction. They're long-term, although they may address some short-term goals. Ultimately, they're all predicated on adding the maximum value for our sectors. Can we compete? Absolutely. Are we going to compete solely on commodity prices? I don't think so. But can we compete on the value add side? Absolutely. There's incredible innovation here. And what we're doing is just one small step in the ability to try to pull that together and as quickly as possible get that into the hands of the people who will benefit the most.
What areas will Alberta be focusing on? Give me some examples.
Well, I have to admit, because of my own background in biotech, I think one of the areas that excites me the most is certainly the new focus on the bio-based economy. You've heard a lot about the new initiatives in bioenergy, biofuels. We talked a bit today about the research programs in bioplastics from oil seeds and the like. This is an area which has phenomenal potential. Not just, it's a wonderful green story when you think about it. The application of biology to complex problems which are environmentally friendly, ultimately. And I think, IFASA's approach in terms of collaboration amongst the research community as well as partnership with industry, I think, is the best way for us to move forward as quickly as possible. So I am a huge supporter of our efforts in the bioeconomy-based areas. I think others are, for example, we have two extremely important programs that are related to our livestock industry. There is the genomics programs, which are looking at long-term issues such as, what are what traits are important to the consumer. The value-added meats program, both fresh and processed meats, are moving us into the value-add sector more and more, which I believe is critical for our growth. Similarly, we have programs that will be focused in the crop sector, and how do we grow that, sustain that, how do we add value? All of those are important because they dovetail with our growth strategy. They go back to helping support our industries, and they also look to the future. So, but as I say, I have my personal favorite, of course, is on the bio-based economy.
Why is that?
Because it truly can potentially address so many issues and opportunities. I worked with one Dutch company previous to coming to Alberta, and we spent a lot of time developing what was called industrial biotech, replacing old, environmentally unfriendly processes that relied on temperatures, high pressure solvents, and we replaced them with biological processes. Economically efficient, and we removed much of the solvents or the operating parameters which made them unfriendly, if I could use that term. It's a small example of what biology can do. And if we look at the bio-based economy and its future, you're looking at sustainability. How do we address the long-term future, looking at new opportunities and markets? I mean, everybody in the world is beginning to focus in this area. So our opportunity is now to build this. But if you think about it, how do we take crops, for example, and extract maximum value? How do we create new materials which have possibly even new applications we don't even know about? We're working in that area through IFASA, for example. The bioenergy side, those are the first steps towards a long road for sustainability. And I think ultimately the application of biology can address other issues ultimately. So for me, it's a part of a long-term future of what I think certainly Alberta, the West, and Canada will look like.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That was Tom Facklem, CEO of IFASA, the Institute for Food and Agricultural Sciences, Alberta. I also spoke to Micah Ossenchuk, Doug Horner, and Chuck Strahl. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our e-newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the University of Lethbridge, Alberta Research Council, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, Calgary Technologies, Inc., Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, Alberta Innovation and Science, Alberta Gaming Research Institute, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, Alberta Ingenuity, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, Alberta Conservation Association, and the NSERC Industrial Chair in Integrated Landscape Management. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.